All right, part two. Another person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl." And I should point out, this is going to be a very long expression from this person, but I feel it's important that I read all of it. "Hello, Daryl. Recently, I came across your website, and I'm going through the bigger part of it now. Thank you for putting up such a clear and direct message. I instantly felt a recognition in what you were presenting. At the moment, I'm going through some kind of spiritual crisis, or a dark night of the soul, as some people might say. About a year ago, I had a major glimpse into what might be called the non-dual reality. On and off, I've had these glimpses before, but in earlier ones, there always remained a slight sense of a me as an individual. This major glimpse struck like lightning, and would probably in Zen terms be defined as kensho. It struck very fast, and in such an intense way that the I, or the me, felt completely eradicated. Still, I have to use the word I now when trying to describe it, although there was no sense of an I when the event took place. I was struck with such an absolute clarity of perception of the surroundings, the wood panels on the floor, the chairs, the tables, the sounds from outside, everything. Everything was absolutely immaculately perfect. And the way that everything unfolded was perfect. And it had always been perfect. In that moment, I realized that nothing had ever been wrong. How could it? There was a feeling of great awe, and I remember a thought or realization arising in the mind saying, 'There is no me anymore. No one is in there.' And I laughed and I sighed. It felt like a huge burden had been lifted from my being. When this struck me, I was just entering into a cafe. So I ordered a tea, sat down at the terrace, and just looked around me. I was alone in the cafe at the time, and I spent a couple of hours observing the sunlight dancing on the surface of some nearby water. There was a peacefulness and joy I have never felt before, and I knew that this was it, what I'd always been looking for. It felt like finally coming back home. And so it lasted for a few hours. Then thoughts slowly started coming back again. I remember the contradictory nature of this process. Some thoughts carried questions sounding like, 'What is this? What is it that is happening right now?' Whereas some thoughts were clearly opposite and sounding more like, 'No, no, stop thinking. Keep your mind clear. You're ruining this wonderful bliss experience with your presence.' But the thoughts eventually took over again, and so the clarity faded, and I was back to being the old me again. Or so I thought, at least. After this event, I feel more confused than ever. It's like my self-image has been smashed into pieces, and I'm no longer sure of who I am, where I am, or if I exist at all. There is this confusion, and also a longing to return to this ego-free state. But the ego, although wounded by the experience, is still doing its very best to regain its former control and seems to be more desperate than ever. And right now, it's throwing the worst at me. The highs and lows have become more and more extreme, and I seem to have no control over how things are going. There are still moments of clarity arising, but never as intense as it happened that day in the cafe. The lows, however, seem to become more and more intense every time they return. Feelings of complete and utter meaninglessness arise. It's hard to find motivation to do anything at all. Even the simplest tasks seem difficult, and it all seems pointless. And during the lows, I feel so completely lost and disconnected to everything. Despite knowing that there is no external form to hold on to, some part of me still seems to cling to the idea of myself as a separate person. Still, at the same time as all of this is happening, when the horror and the anxiety forces me to the ground and I lay there crying, there is still a kind of clarity of what is going on. I know that what is happening is the ego's fear of dying. In lack of any other options, I have fallen to my knees and prayed to God for help. To help let the me inside of me finally give up. And in a way, I suppose God is actually helping me, because what I am presented with is complete and utter silence. Nothing. No answers, no angels, no light, no hope, just silence and the darkness around me. And then it goes to a point where something inside of me just gives up and surrenders to it all, and it feels like dying. And then it shoots away into the other extreme for a while, which is this clarity and empty mind again. And it feels okay for some time, until the ego once again returns, wounded and even more desperate than before, and tries to conquer the throne again. I think the ego knows that it is fighting a losing battle. I do my best to let it be, to accept it when it comes, but these jumps between ups and downs wears me out. I'm getting very tired and find it hard to have an ordinary life. All I want is peace of mind and a final let go of the ego. I suppose that the longing to get rid of the ego is also a product of the ego. Some people seem to have an apparently easy and fast awakening, whereas some people apparently have a harder process to go through. This drama queen inside of me seems to never give up. Sometimes it feels like an alien intruder inside of my head, planting those thoughts of self-centeredness, negativity, and fear in me, and it's driving me crazy. I'm getting sick of my own internal dialogue. I know that the question, is there anything I can do, is not really valid any longer, but maybe you could still say something about all of this. Thank you in advance, and have a marvelous day. Looking forward to your reply. Yeah, sounds good. First and foremost, let me say that what's being described here is one of the apparent ways that a non-dual sensibility may arise. It's not the way that every non-dual sensibility arises, nor does this particular way that it arises, it's not better than any other way that it arises. It's just one of the apparent ways that a non-dual sensibility may arise. And for anyone, any apparent person that has their non-dual sensibility arising in this way, it can be very difficult. So if I was to say anything about this particular case, I would point out that in this kind of situation, if you can, it's important to attend to the very basics of your living so that you continue to eat healthy food and you continue to get a bit of physical exercise, nothing extreme. It's healthy to get some rest, again, nothing extreme. It's healthy to spend some time in the daylight, in the sunshine. It's healthy to spend some time around other people that are simply going about their daily lives. It's healthy to spend some time in situations that are pleasant and enjoyable, that it's supportive. One might say it's supportive to attend to these basics. Not to get rid of anything, but it simply offsets any of the really intense moments in this kind of situation. And I offer these only if you're interested. Now, as far as any other comment on this, even though the bottom line is that this is a totally unexplainable happening, presenting itself in the way that it's presenting itself, and that's the bottom line in a non-dual sensibility, within the world of apparent form and within the world of apparent awakenings, it's sometimes the case that a non-dual sensibility arises in this manner. And so one way of looking at it would be that there has been this very deep acknowledgement of the big unformed happening, the big unexplainable happening of the moment, and that is ultimately explainable, that it is undivided. So it's not a situation of somebody being separate from it, making it happen. So there's been this very deep acknowledgement. of the unformed, unexplainable happening of this moment. And we might say that what's occurred is in that deep acknowledgement, it's pulled away all of the foundations for the usual concepts there that we have about life. It begins to pull away what we normally have considered to be what we were pointing to when we said the word I or me. It's pulled away what we normally thought life was when we pointed to something and said that's a wall and that's a floor. And now it's presented itself as this big mysterious happening, but in doing that, it throws the whole world of concepts into disarray. And if the acknowledgement of this great, mysterious, unexplainable, unformed happening has been a very deep one, then the world of thought, the world of views, the world of explanation ends up scrambling to make sense of all of this. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that the storylines can't make sense of this. The ultimate acknowledgement is that the storylines can't really describe what's going on here. However, the storylines are not our choosing. We don't choose to have a storyline. The apparent storyline is also an expression of this larger mysterious happening. And the confusion that's presented in this particular situation is also an expression of this larger mysterious happening. And basically, the storylines will have to rearrange themselves in order to accommodate what's being acknowledged in this larger mysterious happening of the moment. So the most basic acknowledgement would have to be that the storyline can't really tell us what's going on here. And that the storylines themselves and this scrambling of the storyline, that itself is a totally mysterious event, simply occurring the way it's occurring. And it's occurring to its own nature. And in general, its own nature will be a rearrangement of the world of concepts so that the old concepts that were apparently there can't live with this new acknowledgement. So those concepts have to automatically rearrange themselves in order to live with this new acknowledgement that all of existence is this unexplainable, unformed, eventing, simply eventing. The world of concepts will have to accommodate the fact that even though ultimately there is no self separate from the rest of existence, there will be moments where it may feel like there's a self in charge. There may be moments where it's very obvious that there is no self in charge, but there will be other moments where initially it will feel like there is someone in charge or possibly somebody in charge or not really knowing whether somebody's in charge or not in charge or feeling like there's someone in charge, but ultimately knowing on a very deep level that there isn't anyone in charge. All kinds of things might be presented. And like any storm in nature, this is a storm. And like any storm in nature, it will subside. It will calm down. But we don't get to say when exactly it will calm down. So my comment in regards to this situation is, if you can, just be a little bit careful about how much you're wanting to explain any of this, because there is no explanation. And if you try to explain this, it will be accompanied by more and more confusion. It will be accompanied by constant frustration And in this particular situation, what will be even more frustrating is the moment you start into an explanation, that explanation will be replaced by another explanation, because everything is kind of charged with more energy, it seems. And everything is scrambling around, it's in disarray as far as this world of concepts. So in some way, there is a realization that these concepts can't explain themselves, or whatever concept arises, there's an immediate acknowledgement that that concept is limited. And so there may still be an attempt to explain all of this. And so the first concept will be immediately replaced by another concept, and then it'll be seen that that's limited, and that'll be replaced by another concept. And it'll just seem like this endless barrage of thought and this endless frustration and this endless futility of trying to explain this. And it will put you on your back. It will exhaust you. So again, it's important to attend to the basics. Continue to eat healthy food. If you can, get some time away from dark rooms and late nights and spend a little bit of time in the sunshine, maybe around children, or just some place where people are enjoying themselves, like the park. Just sit in the sunshine, watch the people playing. If there's no sun shining and in your particular time of year, you might find some pleasant surrounding, go to a pleasant movie, just something that offsets some of the intensity of this. Get a bit of rest, get a bit of physical exercise, nothing extreme. There may be a tendency to try to drive away all of this or wear it out. And it's going to play out in whatever way it's going to play out. If you're interested in attending to some of these supportive basics, these very simple, healthy basics of living, then by all means, use those as some kind of healthy support in this situation. In any event, what we have to acknowledge in this non-dual sensibility is that life is simply a big eventing on its own. And everything that we are is a presentation of this eventing. Even though it seems like we get to choose certain things, it's not the fact that we're choosing certain things. And all of us know that we ultimately don't have absolute control over existence. So the acknowledgement from this non-dual sensibility is, here it is, it's presenting what it is. It now seems to be presenting a movement to a non-dual sensibility, but it's important to acknowledge that a non-dual sensibility is not a movement to one specific mind state. It's not a movement to understanding existence. It's a movement to acknowledging a totally mysterious happening, simply happening on its own. And it's the acknowledgement that sometimes that presentation is extremely unpleasant. It doesn't matter whether you're awakened or not. Sometimes the presentation of the great ocean of existence is extremely unpleasant. But it has no particular form. So even if it does seem extremely unpleasant in this moment, that's not its form. It has no particular form. It will calm down. It will once again present itself in a calm fashion. And for this person, even though it might seem impossible now, actually when this calms down, it will express a sense of clarity that's deeper than any clarity that's presented itself before. Now, when it starts presenting that clarity, be careful, because at some point it's going to move beyond that clarity too, because that clarity is not its specific form. So again, ultimately, from this non-dual sensibility, what we have to acknowledge is that existence, the happening of this moment, the apparent happening of this moment, is simply an unexplainable, unformed, or formless eventing. Or let's not even say eventing, it's just unexplainable, it's unformed, or without form, or formless, and it's just presenting itself. Everything we seem to be is part of its presentation. Now, when this person initially wrote in, I felt she needed a very quick response. And so I wrote back expressing that if she was interested, she could, she might consider attending to the very basics of her survival. Good food, a little bit of exercise, some relaxation, spending time in enjoyable surroundings. It's also the case that even if we just go have a talk with somebody who's dealing with ordinary everyday situations, it will sometimes take the edge off some of these more extreme experiences. And anyway, she wrote back saying, "Hello again. Thank you for writing back to me this soon. I very much appreciate it. In a way, it's funny because on an intellectual level, I'm quite clear as to what is happening. Even in the darkest moments, in the middle of it all, there seems to be a very tiny point of total indifference as to what is going on, and inside this point there is a stillness and a peace. But the rest, everything around it, is complete confusion and desperation. Tears come, anxiety comes, fears comes, fear comes, sadness comes, confusion comes, and I'm stuck there, watching it all from the inside, while it unfolds on what seems to be an external level. It's like all those feelings I used to identify with come back with 100 times stronger now when I know that they don't belong to me. They don't belong to me any more than the clouds in the sky belong to me. It just seems like some subconscious part is trying to buy more time by making a hell of a mess in there, in the mind, instead of surrendering, and it produces a heavy fatigue. I suppose it is an unconscious fear, because on a conscious level, when I close my eyes and try to sense the emotions, I do not feel any real fear. There is a sense of an indefinable discomfort and a tiredness, but also there is a sense of curiosity, and on good days, when I can reach a deeper level, a complete indifference as to what is actually happening. It's hard to put words to it. Up, down, up, down. Some part of me knows that entering that point of stillness is equal to its own death, and is now doing all it can to escape it. I think you are right that it is some kind of conceptual rearrangement that is taking place. I'm sure it will, sooner or later, all fall into place. I hope sooner, because this has been quite a messy year so far. I found your talk about change and the parable of the clouds in constant transformation to be very helpful and soothing. Thank you once again for what you are doing, keeping the website going, and offering such a simple yet profound message to a lot of people out there. Of course, like you say, it cannot make sense to everybody. We are all unique beings on our own unique journeys through this infinity. But for me, at this point in time, it has been very comforting and helpful to find your website, to know that I am not alone, looking forward to next month's talk. All the best." That's great. She has, somewhere in there, there's this underlying confidence that all of this is appropriate. All of this is the appropriate playing out of the totally unexplainable happening of life. And it's very obvious that for this person, she is very much expressed with a non-dual sensibility, and life is expressing her more and more with that certainty. However, in the apparent arising of this non-dual sensibility, it's not quite to a point where there's a totally confident acknowledgement of, you know, that this is absolutely unexplainable, and that it's always just a totally unexplainable happening presenting itself. There's no way to say what it's going to present. There's no way of saying, you know, people have this weird notion that somehow in the arising of a non-dual sensibility, it's just moving towards some constant state of bliss, and that's totally ridiculous. I mean, you have certain teachers that will declare that, you know, I have no suffering anymore. But it doesn't mean they live in constant bliss. It means that they don't suffer anymore because they don't argue with what life's presenting. And even that's debatable as to how much they've let go of that suffering or how much they've let go of that argument. But, you know, if somebody says they have absolutely no suffering anymore, that's great. One of the things we have to keep in mind from this non-dual sensibility is that even though there aren't any actual forms within the world of form, the world of form presents itself in endless diversity. So each and every expression, apparent expression of form and existence is unique. And by that, I mean it's different. So even if you have a non-dual sensibility, it can never be exactly like anybody else's sense of non-duality. It has to be different. It has to be unique in however it arises. It may be very similar to someone else, but it can never be exactly like someone else. Now, I very rarely talk about the things that my particular life journey presented, but in this particular case, I'd like to point out to this person that in my particular case, when a lot of the stronger non-duality, how would I say this, in some of the situations where the sense of non-duality was extreme and it presented a great deal of confusion, in one particular instance, I even went to a local hospital and had myself sedated. And I was kept sedated on a psychotropic drug for a certain period of time until this calmed down. That was the way it presented it to me. And as this person was pointing out, I wasn't particularly concerned. My friends were particularly concerned because I was expressing certain things that they found very strange. I was behaving in a very strange manner, saying very strange things. And I wasn't completely sure where this was going. I wasn't particularly concerned for my own safety. I was, however, concerned of what might happen if I was in a group or in a situation where my behavior might become incoherent in some way and cause some danger, you know, if I was driving a car or something like that. So in my own particular case, there was an incredible urge to get some kind of medical help in this situation. I mean, ultimately it played out that the confusion fell away and there was just this incredible clarity about life being this totally mysterious happening. And the belief in any storyline was just no longer present. Anyway, let me repeat that this is one possible way that a non-dual sensibility arises. It's not every way that a non-dual sensibility arises. In some cases, a person might not even know that their sensibility is moving to a non-dual perspective. It's just after years and years of being interested in a non-dual perspective, they wake up one morning and realize that that is their perspective, and it doesn't seem to have occurred in any kind of radical manner. However, there are these situations in which it seems to occur in a very radical manner. And it's not that one is better than the other, because in both cases, the ultimate acknowledgement has to be that this is just a totally mysterious event playing out in whatever way it does. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how you would consider it, one of the things that has to be acknowledged is that within the world of apparent form, from a non-dual sensibility, within the world of apparent form, there is no guarantee that life is going to present itself in a pleasant way. The acknowledgement is that it's going to present itself in whatever way it presents itself, and ultimately we have nothing to do with that. In this situation, as this person expresses it, she, even in the midst of all of this, she still has the feeling that everything's fine. That it is just that this major insight that seems to have occurred, the acknowledgement of the great, unformed, unexplainable eventing of existence, that this has sent her conceptual realm into a bit of a scramble, and it will settle down. All right, the next person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thank you for your clear and not so common presentation of the non-dual perspective. I would like to ask you why you never speak about that which knows all of this display of appearances. Some call it knowing, consciousness, awareness, seeing, but as far as I notice, you never refer to these terms or pointers. In my experience, there is obviously a knowing of all that is happening, even the sense of existence. Would you say I am deluded? And deluded by the majority of non-dual teachers that always refer to this aware presence as the substratum of all experiences? Thank you for your answer." Now, in a lot of cases, I will respond briefly. And so for this person, I responded by saying, thanks for the question. I'll enjoy responding to it in the next monthly. For now, briefly, I don't mention knowing because knowing is simply a word that we've been taught to bark. The stories that we have describe ourselves as a child coming out of the womb with no story, and over a lifetime, we have learned all the labels for the various forms that seem to exist. Even if we don't use the word knowing, the moment still makes itself obvious. Even for a newborn, something seems to be happening. But ask that newborn what it is, and you won't get an answer. For the child, there isn't even a question, just a happening that has no definition. Words like knowing, awareness, and consciousness ultimately have no meaning. They just point to this happening. It's interesting that the same happening gets labeled as knowing, or it gets labeled as seeing, hearing, touching, etc., or it gets labeled as an object of knowing. None of which has any real meaning. They're just labels that are used for functioning. You could also use words like Blix flute and wazzle, and they would mean just as much. So then he wrote back saying, "Thank you, Daryl, but how do we know that this moment is obvious? There must be something that knows, that cognizes that fact. I agree that all these are just words. But they can point to what is obvious now, and there is a knowing without a knower, even if the word knowing is meaningless as a word. Thank you again, if you could elaborate a little bit on that point." So just a few comments regarding this. Concerning this last point, he's saying, okay, even if we do acknowledge that the word knowing has no real meaning, it's still pointing to something that we could call that we call knowing. But even within that world of stories, there isn't really a knower to be acknowledged. And yes, that's the case, that even within the world of stories, there is something we call knowing, and that's just the happening of this moment, the feeling that there's something happening in this moment. However, okay, and let me also say that that same happening, if the focus is shifted slightly and goes on one portion of the happening of this moment, one apparent form, then the basic happening of this moment gets labeled as an object of knowing. So if the focus is on the full event of the moment, we call that knowing. And if the focus is on one portion of the happening of this moment, we call that an object of knowing. And then in that shift of focus, first of all, if we acknowledge the entire happening of the moment, distance does not exist. But then if the focus moves to a portion of the happening of this moment, it seems like there's an object out there, and it seems like there's an awareness back here, and there seems to be a distance between them. In the first place, we might ask, when the focus is on the big happening of the moment, if I ask you, how far away is consciousness? There is no distance to consciousness. There is just what we call being aware or being conscious. That's just the happening of the moment. But then if the focus goes on a particular form within that happening, and I say, maybe, it's what we might call a lamp on the other side of the room, and I say, how far away is the lamp? Then all of a sudden we've got something we call distance. And all of that has nothing to do with anything, any difference in the actual happening. It's just different ways of looking at the happening or different focuses in the happening. However, even within all of that, there isn't any knower to acknowledge. So, as I've pointed out before, and if anybody's interested in this in more detail, one of the responses, one of the monthly responses is titled, Put This Bag Over Your Face. And I've explained this before that Douglas Harding had a nice little exploration that he presented. And he said, if you just go get a paper bag with an opening that's big enough to go over your face, and you cut the bottom out of the paper bag so that you create a tube, one end of it you fit over your face, and you look out the far end of the tube. It becomes very obvious that there's the, what you see outside the open end of the tube. And then if you bring the attention back along to the paper bag and bring it closer and closer to your face, there is, in the world of seeing, there is all of this, the apparent objects out there and the apparent paper bag, and you come, bring your attention back. And bring it back as far as you can, you get to a certain point and you realize there's just that seeing. There isn't anything at this end looking out. You don't have the experience of something doing the seeing. There's just the seeing. So as this person is pointing out, yeah, there's a happening that we could call knowing, but there isn't any knower to be acknowledged. However, within a non-dual sensibility, within the classic non-dual sensibility, the acknowledgement is also that these words, knowing and object of knowing, it's acknowledged that There is no knower to be labeled, but in the labeling of knowing and the labeling of an object of knowing, that this labeling makes no sense ultimately. It's meaningless because ultimately there is no real form there to be acknowledged. That's all part of some illusion of form. And even though the illusion is acknowledged, it's like a mirage. It's like you see water in a mirage, you investigate the mirage, you find out there's no water there, but you still see water. And it's the same with this whole world of form and the whole world of labels. You examine the world of labels, you explore the world of form, and you ultimately discover that your deepest experience is telling you that the labels are meaningless and that the forms don't actually exist. And yet, the apparent labels still arise and the apparent forms still exist. They still present themselves. There has, within this non-dual sensibility, there is this bottom line acknowledgement that there is no way to say what any of this is. And yet, apparent descriptions still arise. A non-dual sensibility is the acknowledgement that whatever this process is that we call descriptions, that is also a totally indefinable, formless event presenting itself. It's just a happening happening the way it happens. It's just this being this. And this doesn't have any particular form. It's the constant absence of form. So there is, not only is there an acknowledgement that there is no self separate, you know, there's no knower to be labeled, it's the acknowledgement that even if there is a happening that can be labeled knowing, that that happening, that label, has no real meaning. It could be any sound, blix, flute, wazzle, dweezel, rabadab, oogaboog. It can be any sound. And those sounds have no meaning. But they seem to be useful for pointing to things. And more than that, whether they seem to be useful or not is really unimportant. They're an integral part of this totally unexplainable, or it's an integral portion of this totally unexplainable happening. Of this moment. If we look at our life stories, we can see how these words take on, we can apparently see how these words take on particular meaning. So within our storylines, a baby arrives in the world without any storyline. The baby starts to learn certain labels for certain things. The words themselves have no particular meaning. If you live in one country, it's one word. If you live in another country, it's another word. They're just sounds. Sounds for pointing to apparent forms. Now, for every so-called baby, when the baby apparently arrives, there is no explanation for existence. It's a totally mysterious happening. Now, over apparent time, we apparently learn various labels, and those labels take on meaning when they get attached to certain apparent forms. So if I look at an apparent form, if the focus goes on an apparent form that we might call thinking, we get the feeling that thinking is one certain thing when we compare it to other apparent things. So thinking has a certain apparent quality. It seems to be something that's different from something else called a floor. Now, essentially, there's no way of saying what any of it is. When we're babies, nobody has any storyline. When we start to use labels, apparently, and we point to certain portions of this big mysterious happening, the different portions seem to be different. The different portions seem to have different aspects. Thinking seems to be different from a floor, because a floor seems nice and stable. It seems to have form. Consciousness doesn't seem to have a particular form. It's more nebulous, more ethereal. So we start to consider that, oh, consciousness is like this, a floor is like this. Consciousness is different from the floor. And we forget that all of it is a totally mysterious happening that had no explanation whatsoever. And we ignore the fact that consciousness has no particular form, but the floor also has no particular form, because the floor changes more slowly. And we start believing that it has form. Then we end up with this notion that some things have form and other things don't have form. And then we get into complex stories of a God that lives somewhere that doesn't have form, and a world that does have form, and that somehow a world of form arises out of the powers of a God that has no form, and that God lives somewhere else. And when we're just ignoring the fact that all of this is a totally mysterious happening, that we didn't have any story for it, and in the stories that we have, we're ignoring the fact that even the story is telling us we're making a mistake. Even the story is telling us that when we think a floor has a form, it ultimately doesn't have a form. And that everything is this unformed event. Everything is this formless happening. It's not that in these great spiritual traditions, it's not that God lives somewhere else. It's that God is this event that we think is a world, that we think is a form. The unformed ocean of existence is this event that we think is a world, that we think is form. The Tao, the way, the unformed way, is not something outside the world. The Tao is this same event that we think is a world, that we think has form. And so in the Bhagavad Gita, you have Arjuna exclaiming, starting to exclaim to Krishna, "Krishna, you are in everything." And he stops and he says, "No, you are everything." And that's all that this particular question is bringing up. So, all right. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. What is the soul? You don't seem to use this word in your teaching. May you please comment on it? What can it be, since the term seems to indicate something static, personal, with heart qualities, or something that is beyond the happening of this moment and watching it? Samkhya philosophy teaches about the unchanging Purusha / consciousness that is different from Prakriti / nature." So he's using these Sanskrit words, Purusha and Prakriti. I don't really know if I'm pronouncing that second one correctly. Purusha, the seer, distinct from Prakriti, the seen and the doer. Ancient yogis tried to liberate themselves from life through realizing the soul beyond it. After that came non-dual teachings, which saw consciousness and nature as one. I was watching an interview with a person who practiced yoga for many years, and one day while doing a vinyasa, his self-referential thoughts fell away and only practical thinking remains. This has been happening to him for the last 14 years. He is in silence most of the day. May you please relate to this as well. Please try to relate to all these three subjects, even though they are connected. Okay, so from a non-dual perspective, all of this is mental masturbation, and it has no ultimate meaning. So he asks, what is the soul? And I never use the word soul, but I mean, some people in spiritual circles use the word soul, S-O-U-L. And this seems to refer to some essence of this moment. So, as he puts it, it seems to indicate something static, personal, with heart qualities, or something that is beyond the happening of this moment and watching it. And the Samkhya philosophy teaches about something called purusha, or consciousness, which is different from the everyday world, prakriti, or nature. And in these teachings, they say that purusha, or the consciousness, is the seer and is distinct from prakriti, the seen and the doer. So ancient yogis tried to liberate themselves from life through realizing the soul beyond it. But actually, from a non-dual perspective, there is no soul beyond the happening of this moment. These words, so the words purusha and prakriti, purusha being the ultimate unformed consciousness, the unexplainable happening, the unexplainable presence, that isn't anything separate from the happening of this moment. It's just pointing out that the happening of this moment, which seems to have form, and that the happening of this moment, which we seem to understand, is not something that we understand and is not something that has form. It's not a different situation. It's not a different thing. It's the same happening. So in these considerations, it's just mucking around with concepts. It's not even touching what's actually happening here. These concepts don't touch what's actually happening here. So in a non-dual sensibility, it's declaring outright, or in the classic non-dual expression, which the Ashtavakra Gita falls into, it's declaring that a knower, a knowing, and everything known, these don't exist. These are just ideas that don't apply to what's happening, what seems to be happening here. And at one point in the Ashtavakra Gita, Ashtavakra says, how can any of this be described in any way whatsoever? And towards the end of the Ashtavakra Gita, it just goes through this big list of what it's not. It's not consciousness, and it's not mind, and it's not spirituality, and it's not worldly events, and it's just not any of this. It's not saying that nothing is happening. It's just saying that these descriptions don't apply. So what is the soul? Well, the way most people use it, it seems that they're pointing to this, the essential fact that the happening of this moment has no particular form. There's no real explanation for it. And that's the essence of what is happening here. Now, whether you want to call that soul, whether you want to call that happening, that essential fact of this happening, whether you want to acknowledge that as the soul, or call it the soul, label it the soul, or label it purusha, or label it God, or label it the unformed ocean of existence, or label it the Tao, doesn't really matter to me. And ultimately, it doesn't really matter in a non-dual sensibility, because it's saying None of those words really apply to this. There's no way to explain this. The difficulty with using a label is that it ends up taking its place with all the other apparent labels, and it gains a meaning in relation to those other labels. It gains some kind of explanation. And what a non-dual sensibility is declaring is that there's no way of saying anything at all about whatever this is. It's just this doing what it does. And that isn't meant to be an explanation. It's just using thought in its simplest form to point out that whatever's happening here, it can't be explained. So we can say there are people in that, you know, the world of apparent form, we can say there are people, but actually the essence of a person is his or her soul, and the soul is somehow linked with God, and God ultimately being the unformed, unexplainable happening that this moment is. It's not there that there are two different things, a world and a God. It's what seems to be the world is actually something that can't be explained. It has no form. And that's pointed to with the word God. And it's the same with words like Purusha and Prakriti, or consciousness and nature. One is pointing to the bottom line, unformed, unexplainable aspect of existence, and the other is pointing to the world of apparent form and all the weird stories that arise in the world of apparent form. Now, he says he was watching an interview with a person who practiced yoga for many years, and one day, while doing a particular routine, all of his self-referential thoughts fell away and only practical thinking is there. That's great. That's one of the apparent expressions of existence. But no one else can have that experience. No one else can have that exact experience. Anyone else who might have this so-called awakening will have to have at least a slightly different experience. And in most cases, their awakening will be very different from this particular awakening. There will be a general agreement that we might call a non-dual sensibility. And it's great. We can read about all kinds of fantastic things that occur. Someone might say, I never have any suffering. I had this awakening. I never have any suffering. And that sounds wonderful. But then I look at the Buddha and the fact that his back hurts so much that he had to lie down at times, that he couldn't teach. He had to interrupt a teaching, that he died of vomiting and diarrhea, ultimately of food poisoning. The vomiting and diarrhea went on for weeks. He had a cousin who tried to kill him a number of times. He had students that were stoned to death. And he had all kinds of difficulty. I'm sure he didn't ultimately see that as some kind of mental suffering, but on what we might call a physical basis, there was a lot of suffering. We might have somebody like U.G. Krishnamurti saying, oh, at the full moon, all of my glands swell, and I can survive only eating tomatoes. And it sounds great. It sounds wonderful. It sounds miraculous, but it has nothing to do with me or you. Because no matter what these people express, one of the most basic aspects that has to be acknowledged in a non-dual sensibility, what is classically considered a non-dual sensibility, is that within the world of form, everything is unique. I mean, Jiddu Krishnamurti said, truth is a pathless land. what he was pointing to is that truth has no particular form. You can't designate a path that everybody's on. Every so-called form is unique. It's just a totally unexplainable happening, presenting what it does, and in the world of apparent form, even though form doesn't actually exist, in those apparent forms, each and every apparent form is unique. No two snowflakes are identical. No two leaves are identical. No two people have the same breath rate, the same pulse rate. No two people have the same skin composition. No two people have the same way of walking. We are absolutely unique in all of this. If it's examined closely enough, and this applies in all disciplines, so that if we examine life in this very detailed manner, we find out that each and every moment is in some way unique, each and every apparent thing is in some way unique, and the general consensus would be that if it seems to be identical to something else, that's not ultimately true. It's just that our ability to see the subtle differences is lacking, or the ability to acknowledge the subtle differences is lacking. By far and away, the vast majority of evidence of everyone's general experience points out that each and everything is unique. So someone else may be saying, oh, I had this non-dual awakening, and from that point on, I could levitate. That's wonderful, but it's got nothing to do with me. And it has nothing to do with anyone else who has a non-dual awakening. Because no one else can have that exact awakening. That exact apparent awakening. There actually isn't even an awakening. There's just, from this non-dual sensibility, there's just always a totally unexplainable happening. And within the world of apparent form and within all the screwball stories that are involved with that world of apparent form, each and every one is apparently unique. Let me once again repeat that what I'm presenting here is simply what would classically be known as a non-dual sensibility. This is not the one true way of looking at existence. It is not explaining existence. It is not the one and only way that existence should be expressing itself. It is just one of the mysterious ways that existence expresses itself. From a non-dual sensibility, there isn't even a non-dual sensibility. There is just a totally mysterious happening the way it does. From a non-dual sensibility, this does not have to be your way of looking at life. This is only one of the mysterious ways that life expresses itself. And from a non-dual sensibility, every way that life expresses itself is fine. There is never anything wrong with existence. From a non-dual sensibility, there can't possibly be anything wrong in the expression of existence. Everything has to be the appropriate expression of existence, because there is only this mysterious happening presenting itself. There isn't anybody apart from that happening. There isn't anyone influencing that happening. You don't get to acknowledge that happening in any real way, in any what we might call a deep way, and then say, but I want it to happen the way it happened to that guy over there. I want my happening to be like that. If you're going to awaken in what, you know, supposedly awaken in what is supposedly called a non-dual sensibility, you don't get to say, I want what that person over there got. What you get to say is, I don't know what this is. I don't know what I am. I don't know how this is happening. It's just happening. And in the world of apparent form, for each apparent form, it's happening in a different way. Now, this person sent in a second note, and in that he says, in India, there is a teacher who promises that in 48 minutes, he can help you separate your true soul slash self from your body slash mind slash ego. He calls this initiation the Jnan Vidhi. For some people it works and for others not. Who wouldn't like to realize himself as something transcending the process of life, which contains suffering? In the last two days, I also see how much freedom and healing there is in being the process of life, which includes self-referential thinking. At this moment, I am filled with ego. So what? It's not forever. It'll change. The event of this moment includes thinking. Any kind of thinking. Spiritual traditions promise liberation from suffering and endless bliss and peace. Am I still missing something? The life of Ramana Maharshi seems to be full of silence and peace. He never spoke about a life of opposites. When I compare myself to him, I can say to myself, forget it. I'm deluding myself if I think this is it. I can continue seeking till the end of my life, running endlessly from teacher to teacher, but it starts to dawn on me that this is it. Shankara said, and I'm paraphrasing, I am not my body nor my mind. I am awareness and uncaused bliss. I am Shiva. I am Shiva. How can I say I have realized what both Ramana and Shankara seem to live in complete freedom, bliss, and peace? Thank you, and waiting for your monthly talk. I imagine there is a teacher in India who promises that in 48 minutes he can help you to awaken totally. And maybe for some people it works. Obviously, for many, it doesn't. There are also people in the United States who claim they can cure any form of cancer. And you know what? When out of all the people that go to them with cancer, in some cases there seem to be miraculous cures, and in most cases there aren't. What seems to be a real sticking point for this particular person is that when he reads about the life of Ramana Maharshi or Shankara, it seems as though their life was just nothing but bliss. And I mean, I don't know what I can say to that other than, you know, I've read about Ramana Maharshi years ago. I read supposedly accurate accounts of his life. And what did I read? I read that in the afternoon he would read the newspaper. He would listen to the radio. He would say that he didn't live in a state of constant concentration. And that when he wanted to really feel that kind of blissed out, concentrated feeling, he would walk up the holy mountain, Arunachala, which is the mountain that he lived at the base of. He would walk up the mountain, and he said by the time he got to the top of the mountain, he would be in this very concentrated, bliss-filled state. But he didn't live in that all the time. That's what I read. And who knows what the actuality was. I mean, that account is somebody writing, I guess, what they heard Ramana Maharshi say. I don't really know what he said. When Shankara said, I am not my body nor my mind, I am awareness and uncaused bliss, lots of people have said, I am not my body, not my mind. I can say that I am not a body and not a mind. And I just mean that there's this happening of this moment, and it can't be described as a body or a mind. And I'm even saying you can't call it awareness with any kind of valid way. These words are just meaningless gibberish. And you know, if Shankara says, I am uncaused bliss, I take that to be bliss in its traditional meaning within these non-dual traditions, the word bliss is often used, and it just means an incredibly relaxed state. The feeling that there's really nothing to worry about because everything is just a totally mysterious happening, just happening automatically. There's nothing can ever be wrong with it. It can never go in the wrong direction because it's just a totally mysterious happening, an unexplainable happening. There isn't anybody apart from it that's making it do any of what it does. Everything that we seem to be are simply its expression. Now, if that's acknowledged, if that sensibility, if that apparent sensibility arises, that it's just a totally mysterious happening doing what it does, you don't have to worry about how it expresses itself. You don't have to worry about whether one moment it feels pleasant and the next moment it feels unpleasant. You don't have to worry about whether one moment you're feeling happy or the next moment you're feeling sad. What you acknowledge is that it's going to be whatever it expresses. And furthermore, you have to acknowledge that you're never going to get what somebody else gets. You may get something similar, but you're never going to get exactly what somebody else gets, because within the world of apparent form, no two forms are identical. And was Ramana Maharshi always in a bliss-filled, you know, feeling absolute peace? Who knows? There's no way of knowing. I mean, he died of cancer. He died in extreme pain. He acknowledged there was that pain. He said he wasn't ultimately concerned about that pain because it wasn't his personal pain. It was just life presenting pain. Apparently, he refused medication for the pain, and he said, what he said was, why would I want to get rid of pain? You know, it's not my personal pain. It's not me creating it. It's just, this is what life presents itself as. And he had no interest in avoiding what life presented itself as. Now, did he find that excruciating pain an incredibly bliss-filled experience? I don't think so, but I mean, who knows? In any event, that was his expression. It's got nothing to do with me or anybody else. Within these apparent awakenings, you can't find any two people who have had an apparent non-dual awakening that are identical. They don't express this in the same way. They express a general sentiment that everyone can agree on, up to a certain point. Beyond that, they're absolutely unique. And even when they do express this general sentiment, they each express it in a different way. So if you feel that somehow a non-dual sensibility is arising in you, be very careful about expecting it to be anything in particular. Be very careful about expecting that you're going to get what somebody else got. You may get something similar. You may get something very different. There's a huge range of apparent expression that can all be classified as a non-dual sensibility. So, actually, you could say that you understand as much as Ramana or Shankara understood, and you could actually, in your day-to-day life, have a very different experience. But it still can be classified as a totally unexplainable, unformed happening presenting itself, and that no one is existing apart from that big happening. There's just this doing what it does. Even if it expresses itself in radically different ways, apparently. All right. Another person has written in saying, Daryl, I love your writings and explorations. Thank you. I was looking at your website bio, and I was left with a couple of questions. So he then quotes a couple of statements from the short biography on my website. So the first statement is, however, while his own interests would often lose themselves in descriptions of existence, Robert's interest remained always with the larger, inexplicable event. It was obvious that he had no serious interest in anything else. So at one point in my apparent life journey, I was connected with Robert Adams. I went to see Robert Adams. And in my short time with Robert Adams, in my discussions with him, I can look back now and I can realize that at that time, even though I agreed ultimately with Robert that life was a big, totally unexplainable, unformed happening, on a day-to-day basis, I still somehow found my storylines to be important to some degree. And Robert, even though he still had apparent storylines arising, for him, they were just more of a little game. There was nothing really important about them, because the most important thing was that they were being expressed as a portion of a greater movement that couldn't be explained in any way whatsoever. That greater movement was just expressing itself, and that everything he was also an expression of that larger event, including his storylines, and that the descriptions did not truly describe the big event. So ultimately for Robert, they were never important. They were just part of the happening. But what was most important was the happening. However, at that apparent time, even though I could agree with Robert that my sense of existence was that existence was ultimately a totally formless, unexplainable happening, in my expression, somehow I seem to still feel that the storylines were somewhat important. I don't feel they're all that important anymore. They just happen. They're a totally mysterious event just happening. So, you know, he quoted this piece. However, while his own interests, meaning my interests, would often lose themselves in descriptions of existence, Robert's interest remained always with the larger inexplicable event, and it was obvious that he had no serious interest in anything else. So this person was simply asking me to clarify this statement. Now, the second statement he pulled was from another portion of the biography, and it was describing that at a certain point, I had a strong desire to distance myself from any spiritual organization or structure. So he asked me if I could develop this thought a little more. Did the biography mean that I was simply looking for an ordinary life? But then he wonders why an ordinary life couldn't be found while being part of a spiritual organization. So he's wondering, why was there a desire for me to distance myself so strongly from a spiritual organization? And all I can say to that is that in my apparent life journey, I always felt there was something important about just a very open exploration of existence. And initially, when I would sit quietly, just resting as the happening of the moment, that was a very open acknowledgement of the moment. And so there was something seemed to be important about an open exploration of life. But then as apparent time went by, and I started to realize that essentially that's what many of the spiritual teachings were pointing to, and I got involved with certain spiritual organizations and eventually lived at Ruth Denison Center, where the approach was simply mindfulness of your daily activities. Whether you were sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, you were acknowledging the happening of the moment, And then as apparent time went further, I entered a monastery and became a meditation monk. So it was almost as though the focus of that mindfulness of your everyday activities, whether you were standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, it became even more of a focus on that. And it was within this structure of rules for living, rules which pulled you away from a worldly focus and put the focus more on very the simple activities of the day. In that process, what I discovered was I ended up living with 100 people that were telling me how I was supposed to be observing, what I was supposed to be observing, what the result of that observing was supposed to be. And at a certain point, I realized this isn't an open-ended exploration of existence. This is a very particular developed approach to life, and a very particular notion of what observing is, and a very particular focus on the idea of observing, which was not an open exploration of existence. So at a certain point, you know, I started to question a lot of this. I found a lot of resistance within the spiritual organization to my questioning. And so there was a very strong urge to get away from the being surrounded by 100 people telling me what I was supposed to be thinking, what I was supposed to be observing, and how I was supposed to be observing. So I felt, in my particular case, I felt a strong urge to step away from that in order to just relax a bit and see if anything else would come up. Anyway, I was also exhausted. I was exhausted living in that situation, and it just no longer made any sense to me. Now, that's just the way life expressed me. I'm not making any comment on that particular way of living. I'm not saying it's the wrong way of living. And for Ajahn Sumedho, it's the appropriate way to be living. You know, within that situation, everyone who stays in that situation, for them, that's their appropriate expression. It just wasn't my appropriate expression. All right, that brings us to the end of the questions, and this one has gone on for about an hour and 20 minutes. However, if you would indulge me, I want to make further comment on this whole non-dual awakening and this so-called non-dual sensibility. Generally within, you know, with my so-called experience now over the last couple of years with people writing in, there seems to be some kind of scam that's being perpetrated within the non-dual communities, some kind of hoax, some kind of swindle. And I don't know whether this is intentional or it's, you know, just somehow this is, I mean, ultimately it's just the way life is expressing itself, but I get a lot of people writing in telling me that there are people presenting a non-dual perspective, and they're saying that that they live in absolute bliss all the time, and that if you have a non-dual awakening, you're going to live in absolute bliss all the time too. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely absurd. This is not in accordance with a non-dual sensibility, what would classically be known as a non-dual sensibility, because, you know, so whether this is being presented intentionally or unintentionally, or whether it's just a mix-up in how people are interpreting these words, or, you know, I can't say exactly what's being presented out there, but there's no way that somebody can tell you what your particular life is going to be once you have a non-dual sensibility. If a non-dual sensibility apparently arises in your apparent life journey, all that means is you're going to end up having the impression, or there will be the impression, that the happening of this moment can't be explained in any way whatsoever, and there isn't anyone making it happen. It's just happening automatically, and that everything we seem to be is the expression of this big unexplainable event simply happening automatically. That's the non-dual sensibility. Now, along with that, there has to be the acknowledgement that there is a world of apparent form. Even though if we examine forms, we can realize everyone has the sense that ultimately these forms are changing, whether they change slowly or change quickly, they are changing, so they can't be any particular form. Even though we acknowledge that, or we may acknowledge that, the world of apparent form still exists, and if we examine that world of apparent form, we discover that each and every apparent form is unique. So one of the things you have to acknowledge with a non-dual sensibility is that you can't have the life that somebody else has. You can't have, apparent you can't have the apparent life that an apparent other person has. Like, even though this world of form and those storylines aren't ultimately true, the world of apparent form still presents itself, seems to present itself. And in that world of apparent form, it becomes obvious that you cannot have exactly the life that somebody else has. And over and above this general agreement that life is a totally unexplainable happening, just happening, you cannot have exactly anybody else's sense of life. Life has no form. So to enter this world, this exploration of a non-dual sensibility, and think that you're going to get exactly what somebody else is getting, or to hear somebody say, oh, I had this non-dual awakening and I've had no suffering since, to think that you understand exactly what that's saying is absurd. You don't know exactly what that person is saying, because you don't have that person's exact sensibility. And from a non-dual sensibility, what is classically known as a non-dual sensibility, it doesn't mean that, you know, if a person says, since I had this non-dual awakening, I've had no suffering, it doesn't mean that they've never had any physical pain. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's never been what you would call confusion or loneliness or any of this. They've had no suffering because they've acknowledged that they don't have any choice in what life presents. It just presents what it presents, and all of it is ultimately totally unexplainable. So why get worked up about it? Why would you want it to be something in particular? Or even if you did want it to be something in particular, it's not going to move to your wishes. It's moving to some bigger nature. It's moving to some bigger command or bigger urge. Yeah, whatever word you use, it just ends up being ridiculous. So I'm just, again, this is just for your consideration, but if you can, be careful about expecting a non-dual sensibility to give you one particular result. It doesn't give one particular result. It simply gives you a general sense that there's this, you know, there's just this doing whatever it does. It doesn't give you the choice of making life move in a certain direction. The acknowledgement is you're going to have to live with whatever it presents, because there is only its presentation. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to end up sitting around doing nothing, because what it's saying is that everything you are, all of your responses to life, are its presentation. So don't worry about it. Or there isn't any need to worry about it. As Jiddu Krishnamurti said, the outside activities of existence and the inside activities of a person are not two different things. It's one movement. So ultimately, you don't have to worry about the movement, because you're not influencing it in the first place. Everything that you seem to influence, every response that seems to be your response to an outside activity, all of that is the expression of one movement. Everything that you apparently are is its expression. It's not your personal doing. So if somebody says, ever since I had this non-dual awakening, I've had no suffering, all they're essentially saying is, I don't worry about it. I don't worry about what life is presenting, when it presents it, how it presents it, where it presents it, because all of it is unexplainable and it's just happening automatically. It's ultimately not my doing, so I don't worry about it. And that means that even when there's anxiety or fear apparently arising in a situation, ultimately there's no real worry about it, because that's just the way, there's no real concern. Concern might be a better word. There's no real concern about it. There's no essential concern about it. Even though it might be feeling confusing and conflicting, and there's ultimately no real concern about it, because that's just the way life is expressing itself in that moment. Life isn't on its way to a better expression. In each and every moment, there is only the expression of life. It has no particular form. It's up and down. It's here and there. It's good and bad. It's sad and glad. It's all of these apparent expressions, because it has no particular form. It's not incomplete and moving on its way to some completion. It's complete in each and every moment, because there is only this complete, undivided happening, simply happening. Again, this is just from this non-dual sensibility. It may have some meaning to you, this non-dual sensibility. It may feel important to you, or it may not. Either way is fine. To express this non-dual sensibility is not trying to get everybody to feel this. It's not trying to, it's not saying this is the one true sense of existence. It's not saying this is the one way that everybody should look at existence. It's just expressing what is apparently known as a non-dual sensibility, and it's expressed only for those who relate to it. There are other apparent people in the world with other ways of looking at life, and they find their way just as meaningful and just as important, and they find that they have happy lives too. A non-dual perspective doesn't say, if you have this non-dual perspective, you're then free to ask life to present itself as a never-ending bliss experience. There's no teaching anywhere that says that. And even in the traditional terminology, when they use the word bliss, They just said you would be, I mean, that bliss is just a very relaxed feeling about any expression of existence. Even when it's incredibly painful, somehow there's the sense that it's still the appropriate expression of existence, that it's the only thing that can be happening, because there is only the dance of existence presenting itself. These various non-dual expressions have various ways of presenting this, and you know, many of them simply point out that you don't have to worry about what you're thinking or what you should be thinking or how you should be behaving, because all of it is happening in the same way that the changing of the seasons occurs. That the various feelings that arise in you, the various interests that arise in you, the various urges, the urges that can't be set aside, the urges that have to be followed through, the various actions that follow the urges, all of that is just the movement of existence, and it moves in the same way that the seasons change or clouds move in the sky, so that ultimately you don't have to worry about what you should be thinking, because there is no should be. There's just what presents itself. You don't have to worry about how you should be behaving, because there is no should be. There's just what's presenting itself. It's the movement or expression of this great mysterious happening. Again, this is just from this non-dual sensibility. Not every apparent person is drawn to this sensibility or expressed with this sensibility. Even if it seems like you have an incredibly deep experience of this great unformed ocean of existence, the unformed ocean of this moment, and for a certain apparent period of time, there's this feeling of incredible bliss. Oh, yeah, the ego doesn't exist. And then a moment later, all the thoughts come back and all the words, the word I comes back and the word, all the words, all the descriptions of existence come back and the storyline comes back. It hasn't gone in the wrong direction. You haven't lost anything. Because the movement of those thoughts, the presentation of those thoughts, they aren't thoughts. They are a totally unexplainable happening presenting itself the way it presents itself. That's the acknowledgement. The acknowledgement isn't the acknowledgement of a bliss state that stays forever. The acknowledgement is there is just one or an unformed happening, an undivided, unformed event, presenting itself the way it presents itself. Sometimes it presents itself in a way that it feels bliss-filled and it really feels whole, and it's incredibly obvious that there isn't anybody separate from the event. And in other moments, that sensibility is almost forgotten. And you try to remember what that felt like, and you can't. It seems like you've lost it, but nothing was lost. Because the acknowledgement is, there is a happening that has no particular form, and it's moving and shifting and dancing in its own way. If you seem to be having a non-dual sensibility arising, that isn't your doing. That's life expressing you in that way. If it's moving in that apparent direction, there's nothing you can do to stop it. But it will still have moments where it seems like you're separate. You will still see form, apparent form. You will still have a storyline, an apparent storyline. But the basic sense of that is that even when those apparent forms arise, even when those apparent storylines present themselves, there isn't a feeling that you know what any of that actually is. It just seems to be storylines and it seems to be form. But actually, there's no way of saying what it is. And if we examine those storylines and examine those apparent forms in any great detail, we can realize the storylines mean nothing and the form actually can't be the actuality. So, to awaken is not to arrive anywhere. It's not to arrive at one particular expression of existence that never changes. To awaken is to arrive at what seems to be an endless parade of appearances, passing appearances that have no particular form. And you try to hang on to one thing and you can't. One moment you think you're incredibly clear and then you're not. And the next moment it seems like incredible confusion in certain situations and then it's not. And it's the acknowledgement of that unformed, unexplainable happening that goes on being endlessly unformed and unexplainable. Something that we're not doing. We don't get to say, but I want it to go in this direction. That's where our suffering is. There's this feeling that, well, I want it to be something else. There can be pain, apparent pain in life and what it's presenting, and there can be all kinds of difficult situations, but the only mental anguish comes from, but I want it to be something else. And the weird thing is, even if you have this non-dual sensibility, there can be days when you're just so worn out, you just say, God, you know, I know that I don't influence it. I know I don't exist as something separate from it. I know I don't influence it in any way whatsoever, but man, I wish I was influencing it in some way. And that is also the natural expression of the great, inexplicable, unformed happening simply presenting itself. Anyway, this is all simply for your consideration. I let this run on. I wanted to pack this response with maybe some more radical statements or a more radical emphasis because as I pointed out at the beginning of part one, there won't be a response at the end of August. The next response will be at the end of September. I'll be off in England at the end of August and the beginning of September, and it's just too much trying to handle all of this along with work and family situations and a number of other situations that are presenting themselves in this moment in a way that at this moment there are a number of different fronts that are somewhat difficult and exhausting. So that's it, folks. For those of you listening in England, maybe I'll get a chance to meet you. I'll get a chance to see some people that I know and a chance to meet run across some new faces. I hope the next couple of months brings you only good things. I know, however, with absolute certainty, it's going to bring you a mixed bag of things. Take care. Bye.